Now, brothers and sisters, about times and dates we do not need to write to you, for you know very well that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. While people are saying peace and safety, destruction will come on them suddenly, as labor pains on a pregnant woman, and there will be no escape. But you, brothers and sisters, are not in darkness, so that this day should not surprise you like a thief. You are all children of the light and children of the day. We do not belong to the night or to darkness. So then, let us not be like others who are asleep, but let us be awake and sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk at night. But since we belong to the day, let us be sober, putting on faith and love as a breastplate, and the hope of salvation as a helmet. For God did not appoint us to suffer wrath, but to receive salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ. He died for us, so that whether we are awake or asleep, we may live together with him. Therefore, encourage one another, and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing.
Again, it will be like a man going on a journey, who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave 5 bags of gold, to another 2, and to another 1 bag, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 bags more. So also the one with 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 bags of gold bought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with 2 bags of gold also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received 1 bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers, so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
As many of you may know, our new curate, Chris, has been organizing walks around the boundaries of the parish for the past couple of months. And I had the pleasure of attending one of these walks a couple of weeks ago, where I joined a small group from our community. And we met at the church and set off with kind of a vague impression of the area we wanted to cover. Fortunately, that week, we were accompanied by Sonia, some of you may know. And unbeknownst to me at the time, she has a very impressive understanding of the Lee landscape. And so she took us through these little avenues and kind of tiny alleyways that I had never seen before. And I frequently found myself asking, you know, where are we? Are we still in Lee? Are we still in Hither Green? And I'm a geographer by study and also at heart. And I pride myself on my navigational skills. But on this occasion, I was completely lost. And suddenly the streets around Lee, which I've walked countless times and which I thought I knew pretty well, were completely foreign to me. I mean, I may have been in Manchester for all I knew. And I found myself having a very similar and humbling experience when preparing for this sermon. For those of us who've grown up in church or maybe are new to faith, Parable of the Talents, which we just heard Chris read, is kind of a staple piece of biblical literature, very familiar. And I've heard it so many times and read it so many times that I could probably have recited it for you this morning before my sermon. But sometimes when we reread parables or certain passages in the Bible, we do assume that we've covered all the bases. And our mind, I think, naturally jumps to certain conclusions as a result. And it can be hard to explore different avenues or get creative. So today I suggest we go for a little walk. Not a literal one, please stay in your seats, but like a metaphorical exercise. And I suggest that we purposefully take a couple of detours and lose ourselves a little bit in the story to see if we can't discover anything new. Does that sound okay? Thank you for your trust, yeah. But to get us started, I think it's helpful and only fair that we discuss the context of the story a little bit, just to help orientate ourselves. So Matthew 25 is a parable that's told by Jesus to his disciples during their time in Jerusalem. And at this stage, Jesus is roughly 3 years into his ministry, and we're rapidly approaching his crucifixion. He's ridden into Jerusalem on the famous donkey, visited temples, engaged in several debates with various figures of Jewish authority who have challenged him, challenged his message. And at this particular moment, Jesus has retreated to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples have followed him and are asking him questions about what to expect of the end times. And this is important to note because Jesus is addressing people who are close to him, who have followed him, dedicated their lives to him, lived under the same roof as him. And so Jesus begins to paint a picture of his death, resurrection, and most importantly, what to expect in between. And this particular parable is the last in a batch of three stories, all dealing with a similar topic, which is, what will it be like when Jesus goes away, and what can we anticipate of his return? So that's where we are. We've started our journey. And while we kind of understand where Jesus is trying to take us, the path there isn't immediately clear. So at this stage, we already come to a crossroads. How do we navigate this parable? How do we interpret the story? Now, there is a very familiar interpretation, one in which the emphasis is on hard work, working hard while Jesus is away in anticipation of his return. And in this reading of the parable, Jesus or God has left us with something valuable. Perhaps it's the gospel, perhaps it's physical resources or gifts, and we should work hard and waste no time to ensure that God gets a sound return on his investment. The conclusion is you use what God has given you wisely or you face the consequences. By show of hands, who has heard something like this before? Or maybe you haven't heard it before, but it seems kind of intuitively like it makes sense. Yeah, and I definitely think that there's something valid in that message because we should be using the gifts and resources God has given us with reverence and with care. But I wonder if anyone still has kind of some outstanding questions or concerns or things that leave you a bit curious about this parable. Maybe you can turn to your neighbor and discuss it or even sit and reflect quickly by yourself. Well, at the risk of sounding silly, my personal reflection was, I find it really hard to see what the servant has maybe done wrong. I mean, I would think that the worst case scenario is that the servant goes off, does something reckless, loses all the money, and that's why the master is upset. Did anyone else have a similar thought or discussion? No? Well, you guys are a lot tougher than I am, but fair enough. Well, imagine this scenario. Imagine you go on a trip. Let's say you're away for 2 weeks, and you leave £100 with a friend. And upon your return, that friend gives you the exact same amount of money back. That would be fine, right? See people nodding. So maybe let's explore two questions that I thought of, which might help us pick the story apart a little bit. The first is, who is the story about? There are many theories on who the specific characters in the parable are. And in many of them, it's not necessarily Jesus or God that plays the role which you would expect, which is the role of the master. Some theologians believe that the description of the master as kind of hard or a ruthless businessman doesn't really fit with our natural image of God. And one rather interesting explanation is that actually this parable makes more sense in the cultural and political context of the disciples and Jesus at the time, and mirrors a story, the story of Herod Achilleus, a ruler who was known to be violent and ruthless, and his subjects feared him. And so if you cast that light on it, and if Jesus or God isn't the master, maybe it's not so surprising that the servant fears him and does everything that he can to avoid his wrath. Another interesting question leading on from this is profit at any cost really a Christian principle? Or is wealth at any cost a Christian principle? We don't know how the other two servants got or increased the amount of money that they had. And it's interesting because recently in our small groups, I don't know how many of you have joined the Eco Church's working group discussions on environmentalism and our role as Christians in the current climate crisis, yeah? We've been having very interesting conversations around challenging topics like capitalism and philosophies around this endless growth model in our economy. And we've been challenged to think critically about wealth and the pursuit of wealth to the cost of things like our natural resources, or how prosperous countries or even individuals in relatively prosperous circumstances might reduce their consumption so that others might be allowed to consume more and improve their quality of life. And one really interesting thing that has emerged from these conversations is, what does it mean when the Bible tells us to be fruitful and multiply, or to apply ourselves diligently to our work? And is wealth or monetary increase always the ultimate goal? So at this stage, I think it's fair to say that there are a number of ways that we can complicate or interpret this particular parable or story. But I think the thing that strikes me the most, and the thing that I thought about the most when I was preparing, was that regardless of who plays what role and the exact details of the story, what's glaringly obvious is that there's a serious misalignment between the master and the servant. They are not on the same page. And this is especially clear when the servant says, "Well, I know you to be a hard master," and the master responds by saying, "Well, if you know me, why didn't you do what you thought I would do, or why didn't you do what I would do?" They're completely out of sync with one another, and this is only emphasized by the relationship between the master and the other two servants. I think if we're not careful, there is a danger of interpreting this parable too literally, and in doing so, we read what's going on as very transactional. And the biggest problem or issue becomes the servant's lack of productivity, the servant's inability to produce more for his master. But I wonder if maybe we can take something else away from this story, something that tells us more about the relationship between these two characters. So remember my earlier example about going away and leaving some money with a friend? Let's try something else. Let's say you go away on a trip, a longer trip, and you decide to sublet your apartment or your house to a friend who needs a place to stay for the same amount of time. And on the day you come back from your long and exhausting journey, you put your key in the lock, swing open your door, hoping to encounter all the comforts of home. Instead, your place is disgusting. Your plants are dead, there's dust everywhere, food has gone expired, and the only room that seems to be in order is the room that your friend stayed in. And so you call your friend and you ask, what happened? What's going on? And your friend says, "Well, I know how precious you are about your things, and I know how you like things done a really particular kind of way, so I didn't touch anything and I didn't do anything. I just took care of the room that I was in, but otherwise, I left things as they are." How many of you would be happy with that response? Yeah, no. Feels different, right? After all, it was in your shared interest to take care of this property. And you entrusted your friend with something that clearly mattered to you, and that you thought would matter to them also. Your friend could have enjoyed much more of the house or apartment for the small price of keeping it in good condition, even if it's not exactly how you would have done it. Moreover, you trusted your friend that they would exercise their good judgment in taking care of the place. And suddenly it dawns on you that maybe you and this friend are not quite aligned, and that your initial expectations were very and significantly different. Now, this may not be the perfect analogy, but there is a principle here that I think we can use to cast a lens back on the parable, and that's a principle of partnership. We can't ignore the fact that the servant is under the master's employment, but even more importantly than that, is a member of this master's household, and presumably enjoys the protection that this master has to offer, and has been made a representative of that household in the master's absence. And if that is the case, then it's very, very important that the two are aligned on the standard of care that's expected to keep the household going and to sustain the master's wealth. Perhaps it's not unreasonable that the master expects his servant to be aligned with his values and also to display similar qualities that he displays. After all, the master is living under the servant is living under the master's roof. And it seems to be what the other two servants are capable of doing. And I don't know about you, but I can really sympathize with the master to an extent, because it does seem like he's offering some kind of opportunity or some kind of invitation to be in partnership with the servant, inviting the servant to treat his wealth as their own, which is impressive because it means that he regards the servant not just as some lowly subordinate, but as someone who is worthy of entrusting his wealth to, worthy of doing business with, worthy of sharing in his joy with. And either the servant doesn't know his master as well as he thinks he does, or he just doesn't see the opportunity that's before him. I thought this week a lot about the companies, organizations, schools I've been a part of, and how in each of those there have been a set of core values, often posted on the website or written in kind of colorful block letters in the hallway. And these have told me something about how these places brand themselves, how they expect their employees or their members to reflect those same values and attributes. And then I thought about God, who, far from being a harsh master, is generous with his gifts, with his wealth, with his son, and who invites us time and time again to share in his peace, in his mercy, in his grace, and in his love. And as a Christian, I wonder how aligned I am with the one I call master, who treats me more like a child than a servant, and who extends an invitation to participate in the wealth of his kingdom. I wonder, as a result, how I see God, and if I fear him, and that stops me from maybe acting against injustice when I see it, or offering my services because I'm scared to get it wrong. Or whether I accept the invitation and I serve him dutifully and with joy, because that's what I see Jesus doing in the Bible. Basically, I wonder if we strive to reflect his characteristics or if we feel intimidated by them. My biggest problem with the servant is not that he wasn't productive. It's that either he didn't know or understand his master, or he didn't really care to follow him, and that stops him from being productive and from being useful. I can't say that I have any more definitive answers about the parable of the talents, but I do think that there's an invitation in the Word of God, an invitation to walk with Jesus, to explore his character, to get to know him more. And we may not always know where it will lead us, but I have no doubt that when we accept, he walks with us.